Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Oh, I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. I'm pausing here because I'm quickly trying to look up the market. I think it was mixed today, but the Dow was up to at 19,123. I think the other ones were mixed. So thank you for that information. I was a little delayed getting in tonight. We are live. We are discussing post-election tax policy and why you might want to pay close attention to year-end tax planning this year. To the extent you can, is what I'm going to add. Lori's in the studio with us tonight. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call and talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Lori. She'll jot it down and she'll bring it into the studio, and I'll answer it as best I can. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So first, let me say happy Thanksgiving to everyone. It was nice being off last week, and I ended up taking off a week, 5 days to have, you know, family come, and then a few days to recover after they left. So it was a nice time, as always. Thanksgiving's a nice time to kind of just sit back and think about all the things we have to be thankful for, I know. But we are also going into winter and the end of year and lots of changes. And I think that that has kind of left many of us unsettled, kind of not always knowing what direction to go and where do we start and what do we do with this or that. And just kind of a period of strangeness, really. So what I would suggest is that we focus on something, anything, to kind of help us get through this period and talk about things that we can control. One of the things we like to talk about as we get toward the end of the year is tax planning, any year-end tax planning that we can do. And I actually was going to do the show tonight on some of the proposals for 2017 so that we could get familiar with those. And then next week, talk about specific tax planning for 2016. I may end up combining those tonight. It all depends on how many questions I get and how far we go. I'm happy to take calls. So if there are some of you who are trying to work through your tax planning, or your CPAs are calling you, or your tax preparers are calling you and talking about some tax planning strategies that you may want to implement or not, and you have questions, I'm happy to take a stab at trying to give you some framework for navigating those options that you might have towards year end. And again, the phone number to call in is 610-758-8810. So talking about proposed changes, the funny thing about that is in the old days, I used to say, why bother paying attention to some of this legislation until it becomes law? Because I can't tell you in my career how many times people have talked about proposed changes and they never go through. And for me, sometimes it's just kind of a waste of time to really plan around anything proposed. It's good to keep it in the back of your mind, but so often we haven't seen proposed changes go through. There is talk, however, that this time some of these proposed changes may go through, and if they go through later in 2017, they could be retroactive to January 1st of 2017. So I want to kind of go through, give you a little primer on some of the changes that might be coming up and where it may make sense for us to pay attention to those proposed changes to the extent that we can. So, as I said, some of the proposed changes, they may not happen at all. They may not pass. They may not get through. Some may happen, or some combination of President-elect Trump's proposals. Some of those might go through, but the House Republicans also have proposals out there. And so there may be one or the other or some combination. I would expect typically that there would probably be some kind of combination, some compromise. So let's first talk about some of what is being discussed, and then we're going to talk about how to navigate that. But of course, if you have questions, you can call in at any time, 610-758-8810. To have this discussion tonight, I did a little research, and I have two articles that I'm going to be referencing, and I want to give credit to those articles. One is CCH Tax Briefings. It's a post-election tax policy update that was dated November 9th, 2016. It's a special report that they put out. And also just today, Michael Kitchis put out an article, and that's on kitchis.com, K-I-T-C-S.com. He has a blog, and he put out some a summary, an executive summary, of his interpretation of what he's been looking at. And that was dated today, November 30th, 2016. So we're going to go through some of these items. As we all know, Donald Trump, when he was running, had proposed big tax law changes. One of the items that he was talking about was simplification. The Republicans were also talking about measures to simplify the tax code as well. The House Ways and Means Committee had been working on legislation based upon the House GOP Better Way Tax Reform Blueprint, and that was released in June. And that has some very much similarities to what Trump had proposed as well. So he had talked about within his first 100 days proposing several tax proposals, and that he would immediately work with Congress on enacting them within the first 100 days. It's called the Middle Class Tax Relief and Simplification Act. And according to Trump, the legislation would provide middle class families with two children a 35% tax cut, and also lower the business tax rate from 35% to 15%. During the campaign, Trump described the plan as an economic plan designed to grow the economy 4% per year and create at least 25 million new jobs. So while he has said this, many critics have also said that it may not have increased the debt. So there may not be an offset. And I believe the Republicans were proposing that there would be an offset to their proposals so that it would be kind of null, no gain. You know, the tax cuts would be offset with other measures. And we did not see that in a very simple overview, that same type of offset from Trump. So what he has proposed is to compress the tax brackets into only three tax brackets from the current seven tax brackets, which currently top out at 39.6%. He's proposed reducing the rates on ordinary income to 12, 25, and 33%. So much simpler, three brackets. Well, it sounds much simpler. What some people have said and what Michael Kitchis has said is it's not necessarily tax simplification either, because there's many other pieces of this tax proposals going forward. So going down to three tax rates, this is why it might make sense to look at things that we can control for year-end tax planning if we think we might end up being in a lower tax bracket next year. So that's just the start of this. We'll talk more about this as we go through the show. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are live this evening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air. If you don't want to talk live, give your question to Lori. She'll answer the phone, take down the information, and she'll bring the question into the studio. Let me give you some framework for why you might want to pay attention to possible tax changes. And I will repeat these later in the show because I've kind of wrestled here with what do I talk about first, the proposals or why it could be important to you. But if I talk about why it might be important to you, you might not wait to listen to all the proposals. So I'm going to do it both ways. I'm going to first talk about some of the things that we can control and things that we can't so that you can pay attention to why this might impact you. And then we'll talk about more of those proposals. So one we've already talked about is that there would be a simplification of 7 tax brackets down to 3. And that's for ordinary income because there actually are different tax rates for capital gains and qualified dividends. So for ordinary income, they would have 3 tax brackets. And why this might matter to you is if you are someone who might currently be in a 39.6% tax bracket, your highest tax bracket is going to be proposed to drop to 33%. So it might make a little bit of a difference for you. And they're expanding some of these brackets too. In fact, I think I saw one example that said some single filers might actually be paying more taxes. So that might be a surprise to a few people. Again, all proposals right now. But why might this impact you? There are things that you can control and there are things that you cannot as far as your income goes. And particularly at this stage of the game on November 30th, how much can you control before year end? But there still might be a few things. So if these apply to you, you might want to perk your ears up. There's things that you cannot necessarily change at this point, and that might be your salary, your 2016 salary. That's set probably the prior year. Your salary is your salary. You get paid every month. Unless you quit your job, there's not too much you're going to be able to control there. Your investment allocation for the year, some people might think, hey, if tax rates are changing, I might reallocate my portfolio a different way, take advantage of different tax applications. Well, we're already at the end of November. Your income may be what it is for the year as far as dividends and those capital gain distributions and any assets that you might have already sold, you know, realized capital gains and things like that. Sometimes people think about how much their portfolio has grown or lost. It doesn't mean anything unless you've realized those gains or losses. Unrealized do not get reported, just realized gains and losses. And that's in your non-retirement accounts. Impact of your retirement accounts only occur when you take a distribution out of them that would hit your tax return. So your salary is probably something you really can't change too much. Your investment allocation, you may not be able to change too much. You could harvest some losses. We'll talk about that in a minute. Your pension typically is what your pension is. Some people may want to you know, take lump sum payments if they have that option available to them. They might want to wait to do that, have it hit in 2017 instead of 2016, if that's possible. That might be a consideration for people who are now considering whether to take packages or not and the timing of that. Your Social Security, if you already started Social Security, started collecting Social Security, chances are you're not going to be able to impact that much. Occasionally, if you're just a year into your Social Security, you could actually pay it back. I've had people who have done that. You can only do that one time, and you can only do it within the first 12 months, and you have to pay it all back. There are some hiccups that can go along with that, so not a strategy I generally like people to employ, but it could be something. Mortgage interest, we're already at the end of November. Paying off your mortgage early or not paying off your mortgage, if you've already paid it off, that's not going to impact you too much. So there might not be a lot of planning that you can do if you're limited by that kind of income you have or the power to realign investments and such. What you might still be able to control late in the year for your income might be someone who has some say in whether they take bonuses or not. Maybe you are someone who can say, hey, employer, can you push my bonus into this year or can you push my bonus into next year? That might make a difference for you if you think you're going to be in maybe you're in the 39.6% tax bracket and you could wait to take your bonus into next year when you think you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. You might want to do that, but guess what the business has to do in their planning? Businesses, if their corporation might be in a 35% income tax bracket, doesn't mean they're paying that kind of taxes, but maybe they are. They might want to accelerate the deductions that they take on their business return because they might be in a higher tax bracket in 2016 than they're going to be in 2017. If, in fact, Trump proposals go through and they lower the corporate tax rate to 15%, corporations might be trying to push through a bunch of deductions this year because they won't have the same impact in 2017 if those rates go down. So just because you as an employee might want to postpone a bonus into next year doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be able to do that. Now, if you're self-employed or you're a partner, you might have more control over that business income. You might have control over customers where you might say, hey, could you wait to pay me? Again, they may want the deduction. So you're playing two sides of the coin here. And vendors who owe you money may want to take all those deductions this year too. So it really will depend on each person or entity's income tax situation, income tax bracket, and how they may be impacted by the current tax laws and the tax laws that may be proposed for 2017. Where I see a lot of more control might be investing in capital assets or capital improvements. If you're self-employed or a partner, you might want to buy some equipment because if, again, you're going to be in a higher tax bracket this year, that deduction might be worth more to you this year. Again, this is general information, educational, something for you to pay attention to. If you think any of these apply, you have to literally look at your own situation, look at your own income, your own tax return, look at your own business income, and see if you may have some playroom in any of these areas. Individuals can harvest capital losses before year end. We have till December to harvest capital losses. What might that mean? It means if you have some non-retirement accounts that you have investments in that maybe just with the cycle of the market, particular investments might have been up a few months ago, might be down now. You still might like that investment and you want to keep it. It's just that it's the cycle where it's showing a little bit of a loss for you. Harvesting losses means you sell that position, you take the loss, and then you either buy back into a similar position, but not the same position, or you wait 31 days and buy back into the position that you sold because the IRS isn't going to let you take a loss and then go right back into the same position. It's called a wash, the wash rules. wash sale rules, and they're not going to let you go back into something you just sold for a loss. So you want to harvest the losses, but you want to harvest them in the right way. And then that way, if you are in a higher tax bracket or you're subject to the net investment income tax, that may go away with the proposal as well. Net investment income tax is an extra tax on your investment income if you're over certain thresholds, your certain income thresholds on page one. And that's a 3.8% surtax. So maybe you want to take some losses to help reduce some of the gains that you might have this year in 2016, because in 2017, we might not have that 3.8% surtax. Not sure, but that's probably one of the first things we're going to see go. Folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about some of the tax changes. We had Carolyn from Sailorsburg call in. Hi, Carolyn. And she asked the question, she's planning on major improvements on her home, especially the roof, energy-efficient windows, anything like these to consider. Some of these won't matter, and some might. When we talk about major improvements on a home, if it's just your primary residence, it's not an a business home, office in home business, and we're just doing repairs on our house or improvements like new roof, new siding, those add to the cost basis of the home, but they're not necessarily any kind of a tax deduction or credit for us. If we have a home office, that would increase the value of the property that we're depreciating for the home office. So that might make a difference, and you'd want to keep track of that. Quite often, the home offices are such a small percentage of the main house that it's not often a huge difference in deductions in doing these kinds of improvements. Now, you also asked about energy efficient windows. There are some energy efficient credits that are expected to expire, and I believe in 2016. But Carolyn, what people have to remember is that if they've taken any energy credits in the past, and I'm talking going way, way back, there was a lifetime cap put on these energy credits. And I don't know those off the top of my head, but if you've already taken them in some of these other areas, whether you've had windows in the past, energy efficient windows or doors or skylights, certain energy efficient improvements are capped out. So you'd have to look to see if you had already taken any of those. But yes, there are certain ones you'd want to do. I'm trying to look here quickly. The PATH Act extended the non-refundable non-business energy property credit allowed to individuals, making it available for qualified energy improvements and property placed in service before January 1st, 2017. And let me see here. A credit amount. Let me see. I'm trying to read, Carolyn. A credit amount for qualified energy efficiency improvements equals 10% of the amount paid or incurred during the tax year and 100% of the amount paid or incurred for qualified energy property during the tax year. The maximum credit amount for qualified energy property varies depending upon the type of property. Further, all non-business energy property carries a $500 maximum lifetime credit. So there are certain credits. I know that there were certain ones for windows and certain ones for heating systems or air systems. So we want to look at that more carefully. Just be aware that if you've taken some in the past, there is a cap, and you might want to, if the reason you would do the improvements was to get the tax credit and you might not qualify for it, you definitely want to research it further. If you planned on doing the improvements anyway and you are getting the benefit of the energy efficiency, it would just be a win then if you still qualify for it and could get it. But so if it's something you're going to do anyway, this might be the time to do it. Now, let me, before year end, I think you have to at least contract for it, put something down, probably pay, like could be on a credit card. Now, let me add, though, that you never know when Congress might extend those kinds of credits. So I know at one time they were hoping to make them permanent, but then they pulled back at the last minute and decided not to make those particular credits permanent. They still might do that. They might extend them. They might make them permanent. So don't get in a tizzy if it was something you wanted to do and you were going to wait till January or February. They may or may not extend it. But even so, it may or may not have been a credit that you could be eligible for. I hope that helps. But these are the things you want to kind of pay attention to and be and research a little farther. A great website for this and to find the details of the kind of credit that you might be looking for is EnergyStar.gov. EnergyStar.gov. They talk about all the credits. There's a link. Tab right on the front page when you open EnergyStar.gov that says tax credits, and you press on that and it'll go through and list all the different ones. I know that some of the, I believe, solar energy credits, certain solar property qualified, was extended for, I think, additional years. So that's something to look at. Other items to pay attention to before year end that you may or may not be able to kind of tweak for this year or into next year might be someone who turned 70 and a half this year in 2016, and you have a required minimum distribution to take in the year you turn age 70 and a half. You have until April 1st of the year following the year you turn age 70 and a half. So if I was someone with a lot of income and I thought I might be in a lower tax bracket next year and I'm 70 and a half this year, rather maybe than take it this year, I might want to push it into next year if I think I'm going to be in that much of a lower tax bracket. That might be something to consider. But then in 2017, you'd have to take two. You'd have to take that 2016 required minimum distribution, and you'd have to take your 2017 required minimum distribution. So you really want to run the numbers on that. But that's something that you may still be able to manipulate. Again, so many people who turned 70 and a half in 2016 probably have already taken their required minimum distribution. But if you are one of those people who haven't yet, you might be able to play with that a little bit in some of your planning. Also, speaking of credits and deductions and things that expire, the tuition and fees deduction is set to expire January 1st, 2017. So that's typically for people who have lifelong learning, that maybe the lifelong learning credit income thresholds is too low and you can't take it, but the income thresholds for the tuition and fees deduction are higher and you might qualify for a deduction when you're paying tuition and fees. If you're like a lifelong learner, meaning it's not your typical 4-year tuition where you can get an American Opportunity credit. So the tuition and fees deduction, that might be one that if you would be eligible for it, you might want to make that payment before year end. Let's say you're starting school in January. It qualifies if you make the payment by the end of the year and it is for tuition that starts for education in the first 3 months of the next year. So while the tuition and fees deduction is going away, if I just signed up, my niece did this, she started her program in January. And so some of the kids who are going to grad school or adults who are going to grad school and may not have gone in the fall but are going in January and may qualify for this tuition and fees deduction, might be the only deduction they could be eligible for, you might want to think about whether or not it makes sense for you to pay for your tuition before the end of the year. As long as those classes start in the first 3 months of the next year, we think that's still going to be a deduction for you. Some people who do Roth conversions, they may want to wait to do those. So these are the kind of items you want to think about in your planning. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the proposals, why it could have an impact. And then we'll go over those again, hopefully before the end of the show, just to remind you of some of the items you need to think about in planning. Right now, we're taking our halfway break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 55 degrees under cloudy skies tonight. Heavy rain expected, lows around 46. Thursday, sunny skies, highs around 52. Friday, also sunny, highs around 47. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, partly sunny skies with highs each day in the mid-40s. The time now is 6:32 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can call in, give your question to Lori, who's answering the phones tonight, and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So we're talking about some of these 2017 income tax reform proposals. And I think the article from Michael Kichis, if I'm saying his last name correct, was really a great article because what he brought forward, which I think was really important because I get literature on tax reform and Trump proposals, but what I don't hear about as much in all of this is the House Republican proposals. And I think it's really important to look at what they had been proposing, because if there has to be a compromise, it could be any of these proposed items. Both Trump and the House GOP seem to agree that they would still have preferential rates for capital gains and qualified dividends. But here's where it gets a little interesting, because where Trump has talked about, and the House GOP as well, bringing these tax rates to three brackets, so 12%, 25%, and 33%, that how they would tax capital gains and qualified dividends is very, well, I think, very different. So President Trump wants to retain the current capital gains tax rates that we have, which are 0%, 15%, and 20%. And the capital gains tax rates also apply to qualified dividends. And the 0, 15, and 20 depend on how much income you have and what income tax bracket you're in. So for people who are in a 15% tax bracket or lower, their capital gains tax rate is zero. For people who are in a 25% bracket up through 33, their capital gains and qualified dividends are taxed at 15. And for people, if their income is over the 39.6% tax bracket, their capital gains are taxed at 20%. I just want to point out something that I think a lot of people brush over very quickly when I hear presenters and go to tax seminars, and people will say, oh, if you're in the top tax bracket, your capital gains are 20%. Well, it's to the extent you're in that bracket that they're 20%. So if someone is at, you know, $400,000 and their capital gains are $100,000, it's only that piece in that 39.6% bracket that is at 20. So the majority of their $100,000 isn't going to be taxed at 20. It would be taxed at the 15. What's also at an added later layer there is something called the net investment income tax. So people will add that on as well, and they'll say, oh, they're subject to the 3.8% investment net investment income tax on that dividend income and capital gain income as well. That applies over certain thresholds depending on your filing status. So married, file, and joint, if your investment income's over $250,000, you pay an additional 3.8% tax on that investment income that exceeds that. So if my income is $251,000 and on page one of my return, and my investment income is $10,000, you would only pay the net investment income surtax on the $1,000, only the amount over the $250. So that needs to be clarified a little bit. So then what Trump says is for the tax brackets that he's proposing of 12, 25, and 33, if you're in the 12% bracket, then your capital gains tax rates would be zero. At 25, it would be 15, and at 33, it would be 20. Now, the House GOP, this is really interesting because I really hadn't paid attention to this. What they would do is they would make the rates 50% of the ordinary tax bracket, which means investment income would be taxed at half of that ordinary bracket. And what they, in essence, are doing is saying that it's half the income, and they want to include interest income in that. Right now, interest income is taxed at ordinary rates. There is no preferential treatment for interest income. The House GOP wants to include interest income in what they call investment income and make that subject to, in essence, half that rate, so 50%. So if you have $10,000 of interest income and you're in the 12% tax bracket, it would get taxed at 6%. I've seen it proposed other ways that it's only half the income they're including and then taxing it at ordinary rates. So you have to be careful when you're reading or listening to people. If they say, oh, they're going to tax the dividends at ordinary income rates, well, if the House GOP gets their way, it was proposing that only half of that income then would be taxed at the ordinary rates, or the other way, half the rates is what's going to apply to the total amount. So be careful because I've read it both ways. So this is what we want to pay attention to, again, if we're thinking about where or what income can we shift to which year, if it's going to make a difference for us with capital gains. Let's pretend you were going to sell a big piece of property and the closing was set for December 28th of 2016 and you're in the top tax bracket. If that's the case, you would have this higher 20% tax rate. You'd have the Medicare surtax of 3.8%. And if you're talking about a three-day difference, that's where you go into negotiations and say to the buyer, hey, can you postpone the purchase to January 2nd of 2017? Because quite possibly, if we have these tax proposals, this tax reform go through, in some regard, I think we're expecting to see maybe some changes, at least with that Medicare surtax. So right there, that would be a savings. And if your tax brackets have changed, you might have more benefit in the larger 25% bracket. All right. So those are the kinds of things you want to pay attention to. Now, interestingly, so some similarities in the tax brackets and the simplification of the number of tax brackets, similarity in taxing capital gains and investment income. Where things seem to get different, diverge, is the House GOP is suggesting the elimination of virtually all individual tax deductions, accept the mortgage and charitable deductions. And they also want to then expand the standard deduction, which is what Trump also planned to do, expanding the standard deduction. If in either of these proposals they expand the standard deduction, what we expect to see is fewer people itemizing. So in that regard, it would be a simplification. So if right now you're married filing joint and the standard deduction, let's say, I'm just going to use round numbers, let's say $15,000, and you itemize deductions and your itemized deductions are $16,000. Well, you're itemizing, you get only about a $1,000 benefit there. Trump has proposed raising the standard deduction for married filing joint to $30,000 from the current standard deduction. But what he also is proposing to do is eliminate the exemptions. And I'm surprised that we wouldn't be hearing more uproar about people with large families being upset about these exemptions, but there's about the elimination of the exemptions, because you get an exemption for every kid, for every dependent on your tax return. Now, granted, there are other provisions he's putting in his proposal for kind of counteracting this, certain child care deductions or expenses that may help offset some of this and some other items that are kind of too detailed for me to go into. But this standard deduction, if it goes up to $30,000, some of us won't have to itemize next year in 2017. Some people will increase their charitable contributions to itemize, or might say, hey, if it's going to help me, I'm going to give more to charity. We might not do that now in 2017 if our standard deduction is so high and we're not going to itemize or get a benefit from itemizing. Quite possibly, charities might take issue with this. Most of our charitable giving is done in the last quarter of the year. So that'll be interesting to watch to see. What I also found interesting is that the GOP would still allow tax deductions for the mortgage and charitable deductions. For anyone who knows about alternative minimum tax, higher income people quite often are subject to alternative minimum tax. And what alternative minimum tax says is there's certain deductions we're not going to give you, and then we're going to recalculate your tax. And the deductions they're not going to give you are real estate taxes, income taxes for your state and local taxes, miscellaneous itemized deductions. But guess what deductions you still get? You still get your mortgage interest, most of it, there's some exceptions, and your charitable contributions. So basically, the House GOP, it's not really changing too much for some of those higher earners who might not get the benefit of those deductions anyway. It would probably impact more middle-class people who have who aren't subject to the alternative minimum tax. Now, they are also talking about repealing the alternative minimum tax permanently. So in that regard, this is almost a wash anyway. So those folks who already were subject to alternative minimum tax, who had higher deductions for their charitable giving and their mortgage interest, they might not see that big of a difference or change on their itemizing as to what it is currently. I had a question come in, and what I'm going to do is answer it after the break because it's a little long and I need to take a minute to read it. So I'm going to read that during the break, and then I'll come back, Bill, and answer your question. So hang on the line. You're not on the line. It's off air. But hang on, and I will answer it when we come back from the next break. So, folks, tonight we are talking about the 2017 income tax reform proposals that President Trump has, but also what is not getting enough attention is the proposals of the House Republicans. And we might actually see some kind of combination of the two, and they might be worthwhile paying attention to if you still have some planning room in this last month of the year to adjust your income or accelerate deductions. So we'll talk more about that in the last break, and I'll answer Bill's question when we come back. Folks, if you have questions, there's still plenty of time. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We had a call come in from Bill, and it's an interesting question. He's going to be 62. His wife is older, and I'm not going to say how old in case it gives him away. So I'm just going to say his wife is older, and he must start taking his pension. Now, it's from a company he worked for 30 years. That he worked for 30 years ago. And he has two choices. He can take a monthly amount for the rest of his life, or he can take a lower amount for the rest of his or his wife's life. So it's lower. And he wants to know what that difference is and should he get something better. So let me see if I can explain this, Bill. What typically happens when someone has a pension and they're married and you leave a company, you typically will be given an election to make for your pension. And there are several options. Sometimes we can take a single life annuity, so over just your life, and that's usually the highest amount. Sometimes they will offer a survivor benefit, and the survivor benefit might be 100% survivor benefit, 75% survivor benefit, 50% survivor benefit. Sometimes, and so what that means is while you're alive, you're going to get a particular benefit, but they're going to pay you a little less each month if you also want to provide a benefit for the survivor. And how much less they're going to pay you depends on which survivor option you pick. 100% survivor option would probably be the lowest, and then 75%, and then 50. So it's kind of in between there. So you gave some dollar amounts, and there was like an $80 difference between the single life and the survivor option. Now, I'm guessing that survivor option might be 100% survivor. Typically, I see 50% survivor options as well. Sometimes they will do a term certain. So if you haven't collected the present value of that pension amount for yourself, so if you're going to get X number of dollars per month for the rest of your life, there's a present value to that. And the term certain might say, hey, Bill, if you don't collect your monthly amount, let's say you kick the bucket a month later, sometimes there will be a term certain option that you can take that will say at least your survivor will collect your the remaining present value that you didn't already collect. All right, so got that. Now, what some people look at is the difference between the single life option and the survivor option. If that difference, this in your case, you wrote it was like $80. If for $80 a month, you could buy life insurance on your life and afford to buy that present value amount for your survivor, buying life insurance might be better. So you take the single life option, you take the difference that you got by taking the single life, that 80 bucks a month, and you could buy life insurance with 80 bucks a month. If that is worth it and provides your survivor with that amount of money that she otherwise would have gotten had you taken the survivor amount, we call that pension maximization. Quite often we don't see in today's, you know, rates that it's always works out to be that great of a thing. So you might want to visit it. In your case, your wife looks to be much older. So what you want to think about in your decision is, let me mention, Bill, sometimes too, they'll give you an option to take a lump sum. And instead of taking a pension monthly amount, the company may give you a lump sum option where that present value amount, let's say it's worth $120,000, they might give you the option to take that out and you could roll that over into an IRA. And that's a bird in the hand. Then you have that money. And should you die the next day, then your wife could take the IRA if you've rolled it over into an IRA. So that's something you want to look for too. See if they've given you all of your options. Now, your wife is older, depending on what life expectancy looks like. If everyone in her family lives to be 100, survivor option sounds like a good deal. If everyone in her family and maybe your family drops dead early, that might be something to think about. If you have long, long life expectancy, you're in your family, you might want to say, does it make sense for me to take the single life option? Typically, there's like a whole slew of questions that you need to go through in this decision making. You want to look at your cash flow. You want to look if you have any big expenditures coming up that you might need the money for. Do you need to make sure that you're providing for her should something happen to you and she would no longer have your pension? Is she going to be able to make ends meet? So there's lots of considerations, but in a nutshell, in my huge nutshell, that's why it's a lower amount, because in you're paying for that survivor benefit option. All right. So I hope that helped. So we are talking about some of these differences between the President Trump income tax reform proposals and the Republicans. I find it very interesting. Interesting that they're going to raise these standard deductions and possibly eliminate these exemptions. That would be something interesting and that people want to pay attention to. Let me see what else. I think they were going to look at changing these earned income tax credits and dependent care expenses as well. Let me look and see here if I can find something. I thought it was very interesting. We were talking before the break about the House talking about, the Republicans talking about treating bond interest as investment income. That's very interesting, because quite often when we're doing planning and tax planning with clients and we see a lot of interest income on a tax return, we say, hey, that's all ordinary income. And quite often people have already a number of sources of ordinary income, whether it's salary, Social Security, IRA distributions, 401k distributions, pension. That's all ordinary income kind of income. And so to diversify and get the benefit, tax-favored benefits of qualified dividends, we'll say, you know, maybe we need to look at how your investment allocation is. When we're talking about favorable tax rates on qualified dividends and capital gains, if this were to go through, that would be very interesting and maybe a whole new ball game for interest income. So we talked about mortgage interest and charitable deductions still being allowed under the House GOP plan. Trump would keep all the itemized deductions, but what he is proposing is that there would be a cap, and he would cap itemized deductions at $200,000 for married couples or $100,000 for individuals. We're talking some really big income here. For someone to have $200,000 of deductions that they're going to cap, we're talking really big income. So for people in really high income tax brackets, people with big charitable contributions, possibly mortgage interest, maybe, you know, multiple homes, or state and local income tax. So that, what I'm not sure is if they would still have a phase out, because in what we currently have is a phase out of itemized deductions over certain income thresholds. So I'm not sure how that would work with that. But lots of things to think about. So I want to go back for a minute because now I'm running out of time a little bit here. Let me give a broad picture. 2017, what we might see are 7 tax brackets go down to 3 tax brackets. We might see the top tax bracket of 39.6 drop to a top tax bracket of 33%. We might see higher standard deductions for married people to $30,000 and for single people to $15,000, but they would eliminate the exemption. So a single person right now, their standard deduction, I think, is something like 6,300 in 2015. So in 2016, it's probably going up to, I don't know, 6,500 or something, the standard deduction. So they would make that 15,000. The personal exemption in 2015 was 4,000. They would eliminate that. So when you add, and I'm going to use the 2015 numbers because that's what I have in front of me, that would have been 6,300 and 4,000 was 10,300, which would be the deduction on the tax return. In 2017, it would be 15,000, no exemptions. Also, a big thing they're thinking about, or Trump has proposed doing away with the head of household filing status. Now, some people benefit from that, people who are single but responsible for dependent children, they get a head of household filing status with a little bit more favorable tax rates, and that would be eliminated. So I haven't gone through the numbers and the calculations to see how that might impact those people. It doesn't sound good to me, but they are also talking about adding these child care expenses. But you might be someone who doesn't have child care. Maybe you have a family member who provides child care. In the past, if you've had a family member providing child care, there were certain limitations and restrictions on whether or not you got to deduct that. Now they're talking about doing a state average cost of child care expenses that no matter who's caring for the child, whether it's a family member or a stay-at-home spouse, you would still qualify for that deduction. It sounds to me like it's not getting simplified. I think in some ways it's sounding a little bit more complicated. But bottom line, if you're someone who is thinking about taking some capital gains and you are in those higher tax brackets, if you're married filing joint with over $250,000 on page one, or you're single with over $200,000 on page one, in 2016, you're still subject to the net investment income tax surcharge of 3.8% on the investment income that exceeds those amounts. So you might want to defer taking capital gains to the extent that you can in this last month. And if you have losses in your portfolio, in your non-retirement accounts, if you have losses in your portfolio, you might want to look at harvesting some of those if it makes sense. Again, each person has to contact their own advisor. This is general information, education to alert you to things that you could pay attention to. You might want to harvest losses to reduce maybe some of the gains that you otherwise would be reporting that would be subject to that net investment income tax surcharge, because our guess is that it may go away in 2017. If they repeal the Affordable Care Act, that 3.8% Medicare net investment income tax surcharge is part of the Affordable Care Act. So if they repeal it or change parts of it, that is one part they have talked about changing in particular. All right. So lots of possible changes, things that we might have to pay attention to. Next week, I will go through a 2016 year-end tax planning checklist, items that you should look through. Because one thing we do know is the 2016 tax laws are what they are. So we'll plan to the extent that we can for 2016. I'll go through that and just talk about some other year-end housekeeping that we should do in general, whether it's estate planning, organizing your files, getting ready for your tax preparation. Start doing those kinds of things now before year end while you still have time in case something comes up. So we will talk about that next week as well. We have coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank Jeff for being here, Lori, and thank you listeners for calling in your questions. I really appreciate it. It's my favorite part of the show. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices, and have a wonderful week.